Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ, it's Brewers Extra Innings. Now live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee at the Avenue, here is your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Well, that stinks. Grand slams are cool, but 6-4 doesn't tell the whole story. This game was 6-0, and then Bryce Duran goes Oppo Taco Grand Slam. Thank you very much. The Brewers fall 6-4. To the Padres. They have lost the series and will try to salvage the finale and avoid a mop, not just a sweep, a full-on mop, a four-game sweep tomorrow. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. Unfortunately, we're recorded here tonight because of all of the storms hitting southeast Wisconsin here tonight on WTMJ. So the storm coverage is taking over, and here we're going to just record this in podcast form only. You can find it, obviously, here in the podcast feed, WTMJ.com. Tell your friends or whatever. So I got four things written down here. I've got offense, pitching, youth, and a real race. We're going to talk about each of these four things here tonight on a shortened, really commercial-free, if you will. Just go, go, go. Let's just hit these bullet points and talk about it, because this game was frustrating to put an agenda together for. The Brewers' offense, aside from the home run from Turang, it masks what really happened in today's game. And the offense was non-existent. And the Brewers' offense now, for almost an entire month, has been one of the worst offenses in baseball. And one of the things that is showing its head is, it's not like the Brewers weren't dealing with injuries in April and May. They still were. The way that it all worked out was their offense was covering a lot of warts when they were firing on all cylinders. In fact, earlier this season, the Brewers won so many games in which they had allowed at least five runs, right? That was something that we had never really said earlier, or at least even in the past, from the Brewers, where it's like four runs scored is the magic number because they're always going to hold the opponent under four runs. But for a little while this season, when the Brewers allow at least five runs, they actually have the second most wins in baseball. 11. And they allowed six tonight. Only Minnesota has more wins when they allow five or more runs. So this has been bubbling under the surface. The Brewers haven't won a game in which they allowed five or more runs since they won 12-5 against the White Sox with that crazy long inning with the runners in scoring position, bringing, I think it was 11 or 12 batters to the plate in the Friday night of that series. That was May 31st. You're 3 weeks into June. They have not won a game in which they have allowed more than five runs, five or more runs. So the offense is what I circle first, and that's the first thing we're going to touch on in today's postgame show. When you look at the stats for the team, and these numbers I'm going to give you include today, and it's not just a singular guy. We've been kind of picking on William Contreras the last couple of nights because he had a tough night once again today, going 0-for-5 with two strikeouts. Officially, like, dude, this is troubling that he's fallen off this hard. But you look at it just for the month of June, let alone this goes into May as well. The Brewers' team batting average is in the bottom third of the league, which is below league average at .235. Not going to panic about that. Their on-base percentage is .316 as a team, which is right in the middle of Major League Baseball. Not going to generally panic about that. But it's their slugging percentage that is really holding them back. They have the worst slugging percentage in baseball in the month of June at .331. They have hit 13 home runs this month. That is the fewest in baseball. Tied with the Texas Rangers, tied with the Angels, and only one fewer than the Marlins, and one fewer than the Blue Jays. Notably, bad offenses. The Brewers are not a bad offense, and they're having their worst month collectively all at the same time. Joey Ortiz has slowed down. William Contreras, we've talked about him, he's slowed down. Christian Yelich is not hitting for power anymore. Willy Adames can't do it all on his own. Sal Frelick is never going to hit for power. Rhys Hoskins has slowed down tremendously. Tyler Black is only hitting singles. The Brewers hit 10 hits today. 9 of them were singles. You're not going to win games that way. You're just not. They drew 4 walks, cool. But all that talk about runners in scoring position, just 2 for 4 today. One of them didn't score a run. The other one was the grand slam. It's the offense right now because it was covering so many warts earlier in the year. And it's not like it's going to change drastically when Garrett Mitchell returns. Garrett played tonight in AAA Nashville. They were getting beat by Durham last I saw. Garrett 0-for-3 tonight with a walk and a strikeout. But when he arrives, it's not like he's going to suddenly bring lefty power with him. Christian Yelich is the guy that was supposed to be delivering lefty power for the Brewers, and, well, it's been sapped since he returned from the injured list. Because when you look at today's lineup in particular, sure, Terang went 3-for-4 with a grand slam. You're never counting on power from Bryce Terang. Sal Frelick does not hit for power. Tyler Black hit for power in the minors, but a lot of evaluators feel that's not going to stick in the big leagues. He had no other lefties in the order against a righty in Vasquez on the mound. And I know Jake Bowers is supposed to be lefty pop, but he has really struggled over the last month plus, a sub-200 batting average since he had that great series in Houston. This team needs some pop from the left side, and Garrett is not going to deliver that all on his own. So the dynamic, multifaceted offense that the Brewers was such a strength for them in the first 40 to 60 games of the season has really disappeared. And that's what's going to need to come back for the Brewers first, because that's easier to fix. And that's in air quotes, I should say. It's less hurtful or less harmful, at least, with the offense saying score more runs than the other team, because from what we've seen from the pitching, man, they're going through it right now. Really going through it. With the pitching staff, let's just go ahead and shift gears here over to the pitching. Carlos Rodriguez today, his 3rd career start. He made a couple of mistakes. No walks, but 2 homers. 1 to Jackson Merrill and 1 to Ha-Sung Kim. Both coming in the 4th inning that allowed 4 runs to score. He almost got away out of that inning when he had men on the corners and 1 out with Merrill up. And you got to figure that first at bat by Merrill against Rodriguez, that had to really put something in Carlos's brain, because you're thinking, man, 13 pitches and this guy still got a single off of me? I literally threw him everything. You had a feeling like, oh man, he's gonna face Merrill again, and what's that sequence going to look like? How is he going to handle a second time after a guy just literally saw everything you can throw? Well, he opened him up with a sinker that was fouled off. He's swinging at the first pitch, already signaling, I'm ready for your heater. Throws him a fastball. That one missed. Then he goes back to the sinker. It misses arm side over the middle of the plate, right into a lefty's happy zone. Home run to dead center field. I think it was 609 off the bat. It was crushed. The sinker was moving a lot today for Rodriguez. Maybe a little more than he was expecting. And he was struggling with it. I mean, the sinker that he threw to Merrill had 19 inches of run, which is a lot, but it was still hit for a homer. And you got to remember, the sinker is a pitch designed for contact and designed for ground balls, not for swing and miss. And if you're giving up fly balls with a sinker, that's something you go, ooh, wait a minute. You know, that's got to hold the phone there. He did get 3 swings and misses on the sinker today, but he gave up 4 hits, one of them being a homer, 2 ground ball outs, and a flyout. The changeup's his bread and butter. The changeup was okay today. In total, he got 2 whiffs on the changeup. He threw 12 of them. 9 were for strikes. But it seemed like there was a concerted effort by the Padres to attack his fastballs. Four hits on the sinker, like we said, one on the cutter as well, and one on the slider. And that brings me to kind of a larger point here that a lot of folks on Twitter are kind of bashing me for right now. The Brewers were never expected to have Carlos Rodriguez pitching in June for a first-place team. The Brewers are going through it with their rotation. We know that. Carlos Rodriguez is 22 years old. None of this makes going 0-3 in the big leagues feel any better, but it's just a reminder how big that jump really is from AAA to the big leagues. And with all due respect to Carlos, he's overachieved at every level he has been at in the Brewers organization. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He doesn't throw lights out 98-mile-an-hour velo. He relies on command. He relies on weak contact. And here in the big leagues, he has not had any weak contact. He's not getting swing and miss either, which is not really his game. But it's a reminder that the Brewers wanted him to have more seasoning in AAA. That's why he wasn't on the 40-man. He didn't need to be added to the 40-man until this coming offseason. They wanted to give him time to get his way up and find his way to the big leagues. If he forced his way up, that'd be great. But I also remind you, too, Rodriguez had a really low start to his season in the minor leagues. His ERA was over 5 in the first month in April. And because of all the injuries, the Brewers find themselves needing him. And just listing it out, the Brewers knew they weren't going to have Brandon Woodruff this year. So let's not include him in all of this. But let's project 115 innings from Wade Miley. And if you want to say, well, Dom, he hasn't had a good even year in years, you're not wrong by that. But at the same time, scared money doesn't make money. You got to roll the dice. And if you want to say the Brewers are shopping in the bargain bin or they're not spending money on pitching, every team goes through this. Pitching is expensive, and pitching is hard to find. When you have it, you hang on to it as long as you can. And I said all offseason long, the easiest way for the Brewers to remain competitive this year in the division was to keep Corbin Burns. But at the same time, the easiest way to ensure a good enough return, a quote-unquote good enough return for Corbin Burns, was to trade him in the offseason. They ultimately chose to trade him in the offseason. They felt that knowing Woodruff was not going to be around, they felt that between Freddie Peralta, Colin Ray, maybe you get 100 innings out of Joe Ross. And quite frankly, if you had offered me 100 innings from Joe Ross at the start of the season, I would have taken that given his injury history. Maybe you're going to get 100 innings out of Jacob Junis. Would have liked more, but I understood that. Maybe you were going to get 100 innings out of Wade Miley. Okay, that helps. Didn't expect Ashby to continue to struggle here in 2024. You knew Robert Gasser was going to be up at some point, so that's another 100, 125 innings right there, hopefully. And all the while, you're hoping Freddie's going to deliver 170 innings. Maybe Colin Ray can deliver 150 innings. And it doesn't work like this, but you wouldn't expect multiple months without multiple starters and multiple season-ending injuries. And I didn't even mention D.L. Hall in all of this, because D.L. Hall had to earn his way into the starting rotation during spring training. And now he has been injured due to a knee issue, and even when he was in the big league rotation, it wasn't great. So the Brewers are now finding themselves in a game of chicken with the rest of baseball. They can sit and wait and see what happens to the price of all of these prospects, or at least of these arms that you would maybe want to acquire coming up here at the deadline, right? Jesus Luzardo hasn't been getting the same amount of strikeouts as of late. Garrett Crochet's price keeps going up because of how great he has been. Eric Fetty pitches to a lot of contact, so what are you going to get out of him? Do you go get a rental in Severino? Well, now the Mets are suddenly winning again, so maybe they're not so inclined to move Severino. The pitching market is thin this year, really thin. And everyone's expecting Crochet and Fetty to be moved. And quite frankly, they should be moved by the White Sox. But the Brewers find themselves sitting here like, are they going to pull the trigger? because you've got a little more than a month to say, yep, signed, let's do it. Go get an extra year of Garrett Crochet, right? Crochet isn't a free agent until after the 2026 season. So you get this year and 2 years of Crochet. He's got a lot of elbow issues in his past. That makes him risky. Fetty, he signed through 2025. He signed a two-year $15 million, so he would be owed $7.5 million next year. The Brewers can certainly afford that. And given right now, he's made 16 starts. He pitched today. He's over 100 innings now this season. If the Brewers can get another 15 starts out of him, let's say he goes five in each one, that's another 75 innings, and you're flirting with 200 innings by the end of the season after the postseason. That's certainly helpful, but he's 31 years old. These are the risks that the Brewers are taking because there isn't much else on the market right now. It's not going to change overnight. And I think with the Brewers pitching staff, everyone deals with injuries. I'm not making excuses, but the fact of the matter is they're not performing now. And when the offense isn't performing, they get exposed a little bit more. But then you remember, Rodriguez is a rookie. Myers is a rookie. Bryce Wilson started a couple years ago, but he's been a swingman reliever. And he started the year as a swingman reliever, as a long inning relief guy. Jacob Junis has had a history of shoulder issues. And he's already had a big shoulder issue this year. He's not going to give you more than probably 75 innings the rest of the year. So I don't know where the innings are going to come from. I really don't. They probably are working the phones to make a move, but let's be honest. If you don't get Fetty or Lizardo or Crochet, there isn't much out there. Tyler Anderson? Maybe. I don't know if the Angels will be inclined to move him given they've signed him. He's worth $15 million next year in the final year of his deal. But you've got a month and 8 days or so to figure this out. Which leads me to my next point, the youth. My third bullet point that we're talking about today. Brewers fall 6-4, but it's a reminder of with those two things going hand in hand, with everything that's gone wrong for the Brewers, they're ahead of schedule. I remember being asked all winter long after trading Burns and adding Hoskins and the uncertainty in the rotation, which is coming to fruition right now, what is a successful season for the Brewers? And I said, if they finish with a winning record, that's a successful season, and they might even be in a playoff spot because of the way that the new format works. And still, they lose their third game in a row. They're still 11 games above 500. I would say, for certain, they are ahead of schedule. They were going to be competitive this year. We knew there were going to be growing pains for some players. I don't think they expected Joey Ortiz to be this caliber of an everyday player. That's why they were trying out Sal Frelick at third base, for goodness sake. And if Garrett Mitchell didn't get hurt at the end of spring training, we would have seen Sal Frelick taking ground balls, starting games at third base for the Brewers. They were going to give that a shot. They are ahead of schedule. They were willing to try out Sal at third because they thought, well, we don't know what we got. Let's see what happens. Reese Hoskins signed a player-friendly deal because, yes, he wants to go to a winning team, which the Brewers are, which he so said so in his introductory press conference. But it is his right to get that player opt-out and go try to go somewhere with a little more long-term. So that brings you some uneasiness of like, all right, you got a guy coming off of ACL surgery who's trying to prove it in 1 year. We've already talked plenty about Willie's impending free agency. We were told all offseason or all spring training that Bryce Train was going to take a quantum leap, and he is. But that wasn't expected. Yelich having a great start, then having to miss another 21 games due to his back was not expected. So I still believe the Brewers are ahead of schedule. And you're going to enjoy it while it lasts. And it's another reminder to once again look at the calendar. If this is their worst stretch, let's say worst 2 week stretch of offense and overall ball this season to this point, it's impressive they've made it to June. Still in first place, still five games clear, still in great shape here in the division. Youth is going to learn and, in theory, get better. A case in example is Jackson Churio. I have said it on this program before. We have to be careful when celebrating development of Jackson Churio. And on the surface, he went 0 for 3 with a strikeout. He got pinch hit for later, played fine defense in right field. What's there to highlight in the development of Jackson Churio tonight, given the other Jackson on the other side went 3 for 3, did not get retired, and hit a game-breaking three-run home run? Churio's development is not going to be linear, but here in June, it has looked better. He is not chasing as much. He got shelled, or I shouldn't say shelled, but hosed on a bad strike call again tonight. That changed his whole at-bat, but what did he do to respond? He worked a 10-pitch battle. His quality at-bats have gone through the roof this month, and including tonight's 0 for 3. Here in June, he's still hitting .265. His OPS is still over .750. Both of those are well above league average. I'm not saying snap your fingers, click, he's figured it out, bank it to the rookie of the year polls. No, that's not what I'm saying. You're going to see stretches like this where it's like, all right, cool. This is what it looks like. And last year, watching Bryce Terang having stretches like, ooh, okay, that's what it looks like. And then get cold again. And you're like, ah. And then when we hear quantum leap, you're like, really? And then boom, he's quantum leaping all over the place. You are only going to learn in the big leagues how to succeed in the big leagues. That's part of the reason why they brought Tyler Black back up. He has nothing else to prove in AAA. Jackson Churio has nothing to prove in AAA. Joey Ortiz has nothing to prove in AAA. They wanted to give these guys a fair shot and say, go get them. We'll live with the results and we'll see what happens. That's why I think they're ahead of schedule. And the fact that they're 11 games above 500, awesome. Playing good baseball for the majority of the season, awesome. And if this is your biggest speed bump to point to date, losing the first three of a four-game set in San Diego, a team that clearly has had your number this season, they've won five of the six matchups, that's okay. Some teams have your number. The Brewers have the Cardinals' number. They're 6-1 against them. The Brewers have the Reds' number. They haven't lost a series in 9 tries to them. It happens. And a young team is going to make mistakes. They're going to be streaky. They're going to look like the best team on the planet like they did in April and May. And they're going to look like they can't hit the broadside of the barn sometimes. But that's baseball, Susan. If you lose your mind over every single game, you're going to be on heart, you know, like on blood pressure medication by the All-Star break. It is June 22nd. It is okay. Which leads me to my final point here as we'll wrap up the program with this. It's a real race now. I mean, did you expect that they were just going to run away with the Central and win it by like 12 games or something? No, of course not. It was never going to be this easy. The Cardinals have woken up. I'll give them credit on that. If the Brewers had started the season 7-0, man, you would be feeling really good right now against them, but still, they're 6-1. The Cardinals are a team that, as we all know, has that voodoo magic. I'm joking. But they're not going to get worse when Wilson Contreras comes back. They're without Steven Matz for a while. They've got a lights out closer in Ryan Helsley. Their bullpen's been decent enough. Sonny Gray has been tough. Arenado and Goldschmidt have had weird years, but now the emergence of Mason Wynn, the emergence of Alec Burleson. These have been important players for the Cardinals that are going to be around for a while. They ain't going anywhere. You've got a real race with them. They are above 500 again. They beat the Giants today 9-4, so they're 38-37. They're not going anywhere. The Cubs aren't going anywhere. They won today over the Mets after getting beat up yesterday. You're going to see the Cubs again next weekend, and it's going to be another really important litmus test for the Brewers because it's your last homestand with the Cubs. Then you'll see them again 2 weeks later coming out of the All-Star break, and then you're done with them. Can you win that season series against the Cubs and find yourself with that extra tiebreaker game come the end of the season? Or do the Reds get white hot again? The Brewers cooled them off, but do they get hot again and all of a sudden find themselves in this hunt? This division is far from over. We're not even at the halfway point yet, y'all. This is game number 77. We'll be halfway on Friday against the Cubs. There is so much baseball left to go. But Friday, we stop counting up and we start counting down. And it gets real from there. And then you blink and it's the All-Star break and you're looking at trades and maybe the Cubs pull off some sort of blockbuster where they go get Mason Miller or they go make some acquisition and they go get Tanner Scott from the Marlins. And all of a sudden their back end of the bullpen looks a whole lot better. That's that game of chicken I was talking about. The team is in a weird rut. There's no reason to think it's going to be this way for the rest of the season. William will break out of this. Christian Yelich will start hitting for more power. Rhys Hoskins will start hitting for more power. That was a scouting report on Rhys. He's an extremely streaky hitter, just like Willie Adames. No team is perfect. And the Brewers are now going to find themselves maybe scoreboard watching. Maybe that'll be good for them. Get a little juice, get a little energy. And energy in the ballpark next weekend may be exactly what they need to get back on track. Now, there was energy this past weekend and Father's Day with the Reds. That was fun. But that Cubs energy, it's a different feeling. Or that Cardinals energy. You don't see the Cardinals again until August. So there's a different feeling when you're in these environments. And Pat Murphy has talked about it plenty, how beautiful it is to be a young team and play at Wrigley in front of a sold-out crowd, play at Fenway and take a series from the Red Sox, who continue to be in a playoff spot, mind you. They beat the Reds again today. This is a team that still has a lot of learning to do. They are learning on the fly, and yet they haven't lost more than three games in a row yet to this point in the season. So as they go for a salvage tomorrow, they're going to lean on Tobias Myers, who has been the hottest pitcher to date for the Brewers. Three consecutive starts of six-plus innings and one or fewer runs. Now, granted, those three offenses that he faced are not the Padres' offense. The Tigers, the Blue Jays, and the Angels. And to be fair to the Padres, I was on a radio show earlier this week asking me to preview the series, and I said, the Padres are better than people realize. They have been underperforming. You don't want to be the team that wakes them up. Well, somebody new has woken up every day. It was Tatis on Thursday, and he was out of the lineup today. It was Cronenworth on Friday, and today it was Merrill. Who's it going to be tomorrow, Machado? And furthermore, you're really up against it. I know Suarez threw three pitches today. He's available tomorrow. But now you've given the rest to Jeremiah Estrada. He's going to be available tomorrow. Maybe Tatis and or Profar are back in the lineup tomorrow. It's not going to get easier. And oh, by the way, you're facing Michael King, who has dominated you twice in the last... You know, two times that you have seen him, once as a Yankee and once as a Padre. So that's a tough task as well for tomorrow. All of this, the Brewers are still in first place, still 11 games above 500. If they win tomorrow, it'll be a 3-4 road trip out west, which is fine. But win tomorrow. In the words of Pat Murphy, win tonight. That is the team motto. Be relentless. We haven't seen a lot of relentlessness, a lot of quality contact from the Brewers as of late. And maybe a day game, show-and-go type style will get them going on the right track. I just kind of rev me up and go, you know, just kind of pull the drawstring and see how long it goes. So that's today's show. It was a little bit of a soapbox rant-ish today, but I'm just not going to freak out. I'm really not. This is the pitching staff. This is what it's going to be unless they make a move. So when D.L. Hall returns, he's going to need to step up. Having Junis back is going to be helpful. If they start getting creative with him and Rodriguez, have Rodriguez go one time through the order, then Junis one time through the order, then maybe Koenig for three batters and Hudson for three. Like, they're going to have to get creative. Because the only quote-unquote traditional starters they have right now are Freddy Peralta, Colin Ray, and Tobias Myers. Bryce Wilson has that ability, but just need to see it more frequently from him. Carlos Rodriguez, three starts in, still doesn't have a W, doesn't have a start that went longer than four innings. Going to need to see it. So the Brewers are up against it, figuring out who they are, what they're going to be. But as we talk about the pitching, I go back to the first segment. The offense, the slug has disappeared. They need some slug to get back on track. So for tomorrow, We are on the air at 2 o'clock for a 3:10 first pitch right here on WTMJ. Also on Bally, if you're one of those folks that likes to simulcast your games here on WTMJ. I've got Brewers warm up at 2. Network coverage takes over at 2:35. First pitch at 3:10. And then tomorrow, the weather looks a lot better. We should have a live post-game show for you then. Tomorrow, again, Tobias Myers, Michael King, finale. And then Monday, the Brewers return home for the Texas Rangers at 7:10. All right, let's see what you're made of. Try to create a happy flight and come back home. That's going to do it for this podcast edition of Brewers Extra Innings. My thanks to Matt Yazel, who is our producer tonight, but is dealing with all the storm coverage back in the studio. I'm Dominic Catronio. Don't worry. Be happy. It is June 22nd. We're not even at the halfway point, and you've still got a first-place ball club. But buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride. Until next time, keep on swinging.